From KCUR, I'm Steve Kraske, and this is Up to Date. From the highs of professional baseball and even the World Series to the lows of drug addiction and bankruptcy, former Royals player Willie Wilson has had quite the journey. This hour, we'll talk with Wilson about his new book, which chronicles the struggles he's faced and how he's tried to turn over a new leaf. We'll also look at his coaching years, discuss the baseball youth clinics he now runs for kids in the area, and find out what he thinks of a current Royals team and their postseason hopes next season. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. What a ride it's been for Willie Wilson. He's played in the World Series, he's been in prison, he's won batting titles, and he's whiffed 12 times in a World Championship match. He's made millions, and he's declared bankruptcy. But Willie Wilson, a two-time All-Star, is back, and he's undaunted, telling his story in a new autobiography titled Inside the Park, Running the Base Path of Life, written with former star sports writer Kent Pulliam. He's also got a brand new World Series ring, and Willie Wilson joins us here in the studio this morning. Willie, welcome. So good to have you here.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You look great, man.
Thank you. I'm trying.
Yeah. Well, last week you were at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum promoting this book when you were presented with an exact replica of the World Series ring you had sold at a bankruptcy auction a little more than a decade ago. How badly had you missed that ring since you were forced to sell it?
Well, you know, the longer the time goes, the more you miss it.
Yeah.
You know, at the time that it was taken, I didn't really have anything going for me. I didn't have anything going for my family. And at the time, it was the best situation in my brain that I could do was file bankruptcy. But it wasn't a pleasurable time. And, you know, losing the World Series ring, I've lost a lot of things, but that was the most precious for me.
Are you wearing it right now?
No, I'm not. It's actually at home. I was scared somebody was going to steal it after I
Well, I'm not going to take it.
No, not you, just somebody. But I treasure it. It won't happen again as far as bankruptcy and getting it away from me. You know, I never wore rings a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I wear it on a special occasion. But this time, I'll probably wear it just a little bit more than I did before.
You know, how big of a surprise was it for you when they presented that thing? Because just from reading the account in the paper, it sounded like it was quite a moment.
Well, it was a surprise, and I don't really know how everybody kept it a secret from me. I would go on a road trip, and Helen Moore, who works in my foundation, started a website, I was told. And every time I'd come back, she'd erase it and then erase everything that was in there. And then just every time I wanted to go on either Twitter or Facebook, she would do it for me.
Uh-huh.
So she kept that part away from me. But I couldn't understand how my buddies, and now they're telling me, well, remember that time you wanted to go play golf? I knew I couldn't keep a secret, so I canceled. But it was such a surprise.
You know, among the people, Willie, who donated money for the ring was Pearl Jam lead singer Eddie Vedder.
Yes.
How do you know Eddie Vedder?
Well, I know him through the Chicago Cubs when I was with the Cubs, but I really got to know Eddie in the Cubbies fantasy camp. And he comes down every year, and I get to meet Eddie and his friends, his bodyguards, his brother. His uncle. But, you know, he's just a great guy. He's really down to earth. And every time I get a chance, I try to go see him perform. He's just a really good man. And talked to him a couple days ago, thanking him for what he's done. And Eddie's just a great guy, and I couldn't have been happier. And, you know, he's going through some little times right now, but it's not him. It's his family. So everything's going to be okay, though.
Yeah. Okay. You're on first base. Your team needs you in scoring positions, so you need to swipe a base, Willie. How big of a lead do you take? Walk us through the mechanics of Willie Wilson stealing a base.
Well, first of all, as Whitey Herzog used to say to me, you got to get on first.
Yeah, that's the hard part.
Excuse me. And then it all depends if it's a lefty, if it's a righty. But
it's a righty.
It's a righty. Well, it's going to be easier for me to steal on a righty.
Because his back's to you, right?
Well, his back's to me. He's got to make the turn to go to first. And, you know, what I try to key off are certain things on a right-hander. Being in the big leagues for a long time, I kind of knew guys' moves, what their steps were, what was their steps going to home. And basically, you look at, for me, it was the back right foot.
Really?
Because that foot has to turn to come to first on a right-hander. Now, the left foot, you don't really kind of worry about that because that's the one that doesn't really – that's got to go home. So you're looking at the back heel. And when that heel raises, I'm going to take a chance if I know his move. I always thought that I was fast enough to beat a pitcher's move, throw to first, and then to throw from first to second. And then if I'm going to get a good jump, I'm going to anticipate – and then I'm going to anticipate when the heel is going to go up. But also I want to look at the count.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what kind of count it is. I don't want to put my hitter in a situation where he has two strikes, but then there's certain counts that are base running or base runners count, and there's counts that are hitters counts.
Did you always have a green light from the Royals to go, or were there times when they were saying, even to you, one of the greatest base stealers in baseball history, Willie, not this time, not now?
Well, I think I had to prove myself over the years that I knew what I was doing out there as far as when to take a base, when not to take a base. And to answer your question, I always had a green light. And but the deal was, excuse me,
you couldn't be off too many times.
Well, the deal was if the second guy made an out, George Brett was coming up. So. If it's one out, maybe I got a chance to steal second and George drives me in. But if it's two outs, if I steal second, they walk George, especially if it's a right-handed hitter, to pitch to a right-hander behind George. So I know that I can score on a double, and I'm hoping George hits a double in that situation.
We're visiting with Royals great Willie Wilson. He has a new book out, Inside the Park, Running the Base Path of Life, written with former star sports writer Kent Pulliam. So what's the most important element for you in stealing a base, Willie? Is it the jump off first base, or is it just raw speed?
Well, it would be nice to have both.
Well, and you did, right?
Yeah,
most
of the time.
It'd
be nice to have some raw speed and get a good jump. But the biggest thing, I think, is attitude.
Really?
You can't be afraid to make a mistake.
Ah.
You can't be afraid to be thrown out. And there's a lot of guys who, once they get thrown out once or twice, they stop running.
Yeah.
And you can't do that. You have to keep running because your job is to keep doing what you're supposed to do, and that's to get on base, steal bases, and basically score runs.
No, but your percentage of success in stealing bases was what, the second or third highest in Major League history, right?
Yeah, I always thought that I was a pretty good base runner. But, excuse me. But there's a difference between a base runner and a base stealer.
Mm-hmm.
George Brett was a great base runner. Hal McRae was a great base runner. But, you know, stealing bases, it's a little bit different. So you have to have that mentality and that attitude that I'm going to run as fast as I can, like about 20 miles per hour, and I'm going to slide on a hard surface, and that's going to rip my knees up. It's going to hurt my left buttocks, if I can say that on radio. And it's going to hurt. And you have to really deal with pain a lot.
A lot of pain.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's mostly on your backside where it hurt?
Well, your backside and your knee,
mm-hmm.
because I did a pop-up slide. And so what I would do is I would lead out with my left foot, but I'd brace my right knee, and then I'd hit the bag and pop up, and I use my knee to pop up,
mm-hmm.
my knee and my buttock. So, you know, it was something different, but I always face the outfield so that I could see where the ball was thrown.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the ball was thrown in left center, right center, or dead over the guy's head, I could pop up and go. I just don't like the head first slot.
Did you know within a step or two as you left first base on a steal attempt, did you know right away that you were probably going to make it? Did you have a gut sense that, okay, I got this thing?
I don't want to be cocky.
Well, be cocky.
But I always thought I was going to be.
You never thought you were going to be out, right?
No, I never thought I was going to be out. And it was a surprise if I was. And I would argue because I never thought I was out.
The toughest catcher you ever faced to steal against would have been who, Willie Wilson?
Well, in my earlier years, it was Jim Sundberg, and we...
From the Rangers, right?
Well, from the Texas Rangers. He was a fixture there for many, many years, and he became our catcher in 1985 and guided us to the World Series. But in my latter years, as funny as it seems, it's another catcher from the Texas Rangers, and it was Pudge Rodriguez.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He was hard to run against because just the arm, or what was it?
Well, quick arm, quick release, and then the pitchers back in those days were more power pitchers.
Yeah.
So it was kind of an easier jump because a power pitcher leans back to throw. And, you know, as the game gets more evolved, pitchers have a slide step, or which means that it's not a full rear back.
Yeah.
It's a quick one. And they start working on different things, so they're making it harder for the base runner to take off.
Royals great Willie Wilson is our guest. You know, Willie, this is not a fair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Give us some old guys some hope here. You're 58 now. You've been out of the game for nearly 20 years. Could you still steal a base?
I go down to fantasy camp, and I guess there's some fantasy guys down there, and they see me steal every now and then, but it's only one day.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
all I got in me.
You could have written this book that you just put out, Inside the Park, Running the Base Path of Life, 10 years ago. You could have waited 10 more years. Why'd you come out with it now? Why was the time right?
Because I was right. Mentally,
mm-hmm.
mentally and physically. 10 years ago, I wasn't right. 10 years ago, things were just kind of starting off, and I really didn't have an ending. And so I was right mentally to tell my story, but also I wanted to help other kids or other adults or anybody that was in any kind of situation I was in. And once you get on cocaine, it's a tough deal to get off, but you can. And you have to, with friends, guidance, and going to AA, and that's a lot of AA is drugs and alcohol, but, mm-hmm. you know, you go to all of that. And but the biggest thing is getting help from your friends and then knowing yourself to not putting yourself into those situations again.
You know, Willie, you look back over the arc of your life, man, you've been on a ride.
Yeah.
Ups, downs, man, yeah. You've lived a lot in 58 years.
Yeah. You know, sometimes, you know, there's a thing, God doesn't give you more than you can handle, and sometimes I was wondering.
Yeah.
But it really is, it was an up and down life, and I'm still going to have some ups and downs, but it's not going to be as drastic.
We're back visiting with Royals great Willie Wilson, who has a new book out, Inside the Park, Running on the Base Path of Life, written with former star sports writer Kent Pulliam. And Willie, so many ups and downs, but tell us about the moment when you learned you had made the Royals roster for the first time, because there's a good story here involving former Royals manager Whitey Herzog and your car, I think.
Yeah, it was the year was 1978,
yeah.
I think it was the first
Sounds
year.
Right.
And, you know, I came up in 76, 77, saw the one of the greatest Royal teams ever, 1977. They, I think, you know, had the best record, had the most wins, and I thought they were the most dominant. And just being around those guys and attitude, I wanted to make the team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back in the old days, Fort Myers was where the Royals had their spring training. So there was a back wall back there, and all the young guys would sit on the wall. You know, this is where the wall was, and everybody would sit there. And every time somebody got released, one of the young guys would leave the wall, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was Dan Quisenberry, myself, UL Washington,
oh, sure.
and Rich Gale.
Mm-hmm.
And we were the only ones left on that wall. And so there was a few days left, and there was a guy that used to come down here. His name was – he used to drive this from Kansas City to Fort Myers, and his nickname, I guess, is Brick. And he would have about 12 guys come down with him, and they would caravan the cars all the way back to Kansas City. I didn't know what to do. So, of course, they're going to tell me, since I was the number one draft choice, you go ask Whitey, what do we do with our cars?
Because that would be a signal to you guys whether you had made the team or not.
Right, because if your car went up north, you knew you were going to follow your car.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what to do, so I went in there, and I kind of asked Whitey, and knocked on the door, and come on in. And my question was to Whitey, they're taking the cars up. Like, what do you want me to do? And it was probably the longest, probably 10 seconds I ever had. But he said, tell them to take your car up north. And I was so happy, I forgot to go tell the rest of the guys. I just went. In those days, we didn't have, cell phones. I went to the payphone and made a collect call of my mom.
Yeah.
And told her I made the team. And those guys are going, what? I'm going, go in there. Go find out yourself. But, that was it was pretty cool. And that's how I found out I was going to be on the team.
You know, Willie, you've been described as someone who played baseball with the mentality of a football player.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Well, anger. When I played football, I had to have some kind of anger to be hitting people and doing everything like that. And the mentality of a football player was more of a rough kind of person in a rough area. I grew up in New Jersey from 7 on, so it wasn't where I stayed at wasn't a rough area, but everything outside was. So my mentality was of a football player. So when I came to the ballpark every day, I was mad at somebody.
You don't seem like a mad guy to me in the least.
No, but I mean, everybody gets up for sport some way or somehow. Mm-hmm. I couldn't see a guy that was my friend as a pitcher because I really didn't want to be friends with pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
You're taking, and my philosophy was, you're taking money out of my kid's mouth. So if I'm your friend, I'm not going to be as aggressive, or I'm going to take things a little bit more easier. And that was my mentality for about 6 years with Kansas City. I was mad every day at something or somebody to motivate me to play.
Huh. You describe the 1980 World Series to be where everything went downhill for you. In spring training the next season, I guess I just point out, in 80 you struck out, 12 times,
right?
a record. You struggled and you struggled. What happened in that World Series?
I picked a bad week to get cold. broke or tied 7 major league records that year. 1980,
for good things.
Yes. 1980 was my first full year of playing. I played a little bit in 76, a little bit in 77. I was starting in 78 my first 15 to 18 games and got sat on the bench. And in 79, I didn't start until about a month and a half into the season. So 1980 was my first full year. And for me, I was still on trial, because I was still trying to prove myself as an everyday player. So I'd never participated in this many games. I'd never been in this kind of excitement before. And, I'm not making any excuses. I was bad. And, but every time I went up there, I thought I was going to get a hit.
Really? It didn't work on you after a while and sort of work against you, the lack of confidence maybe?
No, I wasn't lacking for confidence as a player. I was lacking for confidence as an everyday life guy.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a leader in everyday life. I was a follower. But in baseball, it was something I loved, and it was sports that I loved, that every day I went up there, I thought I was going to – you didn't have time, to worry about, I'm 0 for this. You're trying to figure out how I can get a hit so I can get on base so I can score some runs. And so you're not thinking about what you're not doing. You're thinking about what you can do.
you know, you go strike out 12 times in that World Series against the Phillies. In spring training the next season, a fan was chewing on you for the strikeouts in the previous fall. How did you respond? What happened that day?
Didn't respond very well. You know, when you're an athlete and you're a baseball player, your first time you really deal with failure, if you make it to the big leagues, is the big leagues. I mean, in high school, you didn't fail.
Yeah.
If you went to college, you really didn't fail. And then when you're in the minor leagues, you don't get talked about like you're in the baseball in the big leagues. And when you're in the big leagues, all of a sudden you're young 20s, and they're talking about you. And how do you handle failure? How do you handle people? You're trying to be loved. You don't. Mm-hmm. You're not thinking about what other people are thinking about. You're just trying to play a game. You're not thinking people are getting so involved into it that that's their livelihood, too, to get in your head. And there was just two college kids. I imagine they were college kids. And they were just on me every at bat, 12 strikeouts, yelling at people. I mean, yelling at me. Everybody's laughing. You know, I think I was about 24, 25. And it just got to me to the point where I couldn't take it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned around and I tried to literally climb the fence. Just like the Jimmy Pearsall story.
Yeah, you wanted to get at them.
I wanted to get at them because it was just hurt. It hurt so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And not the point that, you know, they're yelling at me. It was the point that the 12 strikeouts hurt so bad that that's getting these people, that's the only thing these people concentrated on.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd broke 7 major league records or tied them. But you have one bad week, and that's what they remember you for. And so that played on you. And for me, you know, I look at it now, and there could be 98% of people loving you. I concentrated on the 2%.
Yeah.
And that's the part that I'm trying to help people realize in my book that, you know, no matter what, ups and downs, don't forget about yourself.
So many of us do that.
Yeah, don't forget about what you can do.
You write a great story for the paper, and you get someone writing a cranky email, and that's all you focus on.
That's it.
You forget about the 100 people who said that was a great story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's tough to learn. It's tough to deal with. And in our game, it's a game of failure.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to get up 10 times, you hit 300, you're a superstar. But you're failing 7 times. So, I mean, you know, how do you deal with it?
You know, 2 years later, you won the batting title, becoming the first switch hitter since Mickey Mantle in 1956 to win the title that way. And yet, a cloud hung over even that achievement, at least for a while, Willie, because you sat out the final game of the season in order to preserve the batting crown over Robin Yount. And I should point out that Eric Hosmer sat out the game yesterday to preserve a 300 batting average for the season, for what that's worth. Whose idea was it for you to sit out, and how did people react to all of that?
Well, you know, that's when you find a lot of politics in this game and everything else. I came into the ballpark. I was hurt a lot that year. Rarely, but I was hurt that year. And I didn't really play the first few games. And so when I started playing, I think ended up playing 130-something games or maybe 120-something. I don't know. But I had enough at-bats and I had enough stats and I knew, you know, I was winning the batting championship, but I really wasn't keeping up with it.
Yeah.
I was coming to the ballpark to play.
Yeah.
And so when I walked in the locker room, the manager's office was immediate to the left, and there was John Scherholz and Dick Houser. And they kind of sat me down and kind of put the scenario out there for me and said that Robin had to go 5 for 5 or
something.
This is
Robin
like
Yount
that.
From
Robin
the Brewers.
Yount,
yeah.
To beat me. And my answer was to them was, well, why don't you want me to play? You guys don't think I can get a hit? You see, that's the mentality I had. I knew I could get a hit some way, somehow. But they said, no, later on, you'll really thank us for this.
Because you'll win a batting crown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Robin ended up going, I think, 3 for 5 or almost 5 for 5 at that one point. But that's another story where Billy Martin kind of helped me win the batting championship. But I got ridiculed. I got talked about. They said I backed my way in, and I was looking at all these other guys that sat out the last game and won a batting championship. And it just seemed to me that they just like Robin better than they like me. And, you know, I was the bad guy. And I don't know whether that was from being angry all the time, having a scowl on your face or what. But I got talked about, and Milwaukee people talked about me so much, it was crazy.
Yeah. We're back with Willie Wilson, the Royals great, who has a new book out, Inside the Park, Running on the Base Path of Life, written with former star sports writer Kent Pulliam. Willie, let's move on to 1983, when your life really changed, when you and four other teammates were caught attempting to buy cocaine, and you wound up serving 81 days in prison. You know, there's a scene in the book, the KBI, the Kansas Bureau of Investigation, stops you on Southwest Trafficway and grills you about your involvement. My sense from reading this was, at that moment, you knew the gig was up at that point. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I knew the gig was up, but I was surprised that, you know, because at that particular time from January, I wasn't doing any drugs. But I made the mistake of calling the person.
And one phone call for about 20 seconds.
He didn't have anything.
The line was being tapped, and of course you didn't know that.
Didn't know that. And my mistake was there were two Willies on our team, and he didn't know which one it was. And, of course, I said my name. So, you know, what I'm saying to people in the book is, you know, I can blame a lot of people, but I made the phone call. Mm-hmm. I was the one who put myself in that situation.
And you're making a phone call to a guy who had cocaine. Sometimes you could go get cocaine from this guy. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it was a big scandal. And, you know, the appropriate name for the title was The Day My Life Changed, because it did change from that point on. I wasn't Willie Wilson, the baseball player. I was Willie Wilson, the guy who had cocaine, and baseball was like third or fourth down the line.
Wow. Why was cocaine prevalent in baseball back in those days?
Oh, just like it was prevalent in the 80s in everyday life.
Yeah.
You know, in those days, you know, cocaine was for the guys that had money and the people who had money. And it was a party drug, so everybody was going out partying and just having a great time drinking. And but it's a drug where you can really get hooked on, and you can really be partying every day if you want to. And when it becomes you're looking more at the drug than you are anything else, then it's a problem.
Why did you start using it, and did you use during the baseball season itself?
No. I used it because it was there. I mean, it wasn't like I was using it with other guys, and I was using it with some of the players that were mentioned in the book, and I was using it with people that weren't in the book. There was people who were here in Kansas City who were everyday people I was using it with. So it wasn't like it was just baseball players. It was a lot of people using it. And it was all over.
Yeah.
It was everywhere. You couldn't really get away from it. And, you know, it happened. And, you know, I'm not proud of it, but it happened.
But not during the season?
No.
Do you think that Reagan, you know, the president back then, Ronald Reagan, declaring a war on drugs, did that somehow contribute to the sentence that you wound up getting? Because a lot of folks who were in your position didn't get any jail time at all.
Well, I looked up what was going on, and there was one guy who had, I think it was a couple-year probation, and there was another guy who got fined. And that was pretty much it. I was the first one who ever who went to jail for it, attempting to possess. But, you know, the bad thing about that is I was happy to do it because what I did was federal. What I did was calling was actually worse than getting caught using it because it's a federal offense. So in order for me to get a lighter sentence, I had to say it was mine.
Now the drug of choice for players these days appears to be steroids, Willie. What about that? I mean, should it be banned? Should it not be banned? What do you make of it?
Well, I don't even know what steroids is. I've never seen it. I don't know exactly. I know it makes people bigger.
You don't see that, don't you?
Yeah, I don't know what else it does. I know that the guys that I played with that were supposedly on it got hurt a lot. And, you know, so I know those two things about it. But other than that, I don't know. But you got to ask yourself this, if you're a baseball player or if you're just a regular day human being, and if you could make $30 million, would you take the chance?
I mean, using steroids to pump up your numbers
right.
and make yourself more marketable.
Right.
Yeah.
If I mean, that's what you got to ask yourself, because right now they're just giving out money. But for us, we couldn't do that to make money. I mean, we weren't getting that much money yeah. in the first place. So the only way we could make money was to win championships. And that's how we got extra money. But if you got $30 million in the bank, championships are kind of like low on the totem pole.
Hey, how did those 81 days at the prison camp in Fort Worth, how did that change your life?
Well, let me put it this way. It was never the same, like I said in the book. But what it did in the very beginning was it got me away from TV. It got me away from newspapers. It got me away from people talking about me. I was in a safe haven for, you know, a few months. And then coming out of there, it was a different story. But while I was in there, I was a guy who waxed and swept the floors, and there was one building and it was all guys, the other building was all female, but whoever had the cleanest floors got to eat first. So for me, you know,
you cleaned those floors.
I cleaned the floors really nice, but there was things that went on in there that you know, there was drugs in there. I mean, I don't know how they got in. There were drugs in there. But there was this one man there from somewhere in Kansas. I can't think of the name of the place in Kansas.
He sort of became your buddy, right? Your mentor.
He told me that, you know, we had gotten a bad rap. And he was going to pretty much take care of me. Now, for me, I don't know why I trusted him, mm-hmm. but I did. And there was a couple times there was a raid on the TV room and a raid somewhere else, and, you know, me being in the wrong place at the wrong time, he just came. The first time he told me to go somewhere, and I started to question him, and he grabbed me and pulled me out. And he told me later on, when I tell you move, and you don't ask me any questions.
But he took care of you.
He took care of me. And the next time, he said something, and I just moved. So it was, I was very fortunate in that way. And people say it was a country club prison. To me, it was prison. I don't care whether it was a country club or not. When you're locked up in a room and you can't go anywhere until they tell you to, it's a prison.
You know, then came the 85 World Series. To what extent did that sort of set things right for you, coming back, getting back right with the fans of Kansas City? How did that change things for you?
Well, I mean, that's when everything in the universe was great.
Yeah.
You know, you go down 3-1 in both the playoffs and the World Series. And I think because I'd went through so much from a down point for so many years, I wasn't going to let being down 3-1 deter what we had to do. And I think, you know, a couple times in each game or each series, something happens that perks everybody up. And in St. Louis, we were getting off the plane and looking over to the right, and we saw "Welcome Home 1985 World Series Champions," and they were only played two games.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, we just got, without a word being said, it was more determination on our faces. We weren't going to let them win it here, and the rest is history. We came back from a 3-1 deficit.
The Dechinger call at first base.
Well, that's why I don't want there to be any kind of replays around here. I mean, we won a World Series because of Dechinger. I mean, at least we got helped. I mean, that was one mistake, but they made a few themselves. But I just feel like, you know, that's why we have umpires, and that's why we have the human error, because the human error is something that we talk about every day. And
yeah.
if he doesn't make that mistake, I don't think we're world champions.
You know, Willie, it's so good to have you here. Congratulations on the book. So glad to see you're doing so well. You're coaching a lot of baseball right now, right?
I'm coaching kids if they want to be coached. Right now, I'm so busy with the book that I'm getting a lot of people calling me to do speaking engagements. So yeah. I'm concentrating on that right now and just trying to tell my story and use it to help people and to make everybody realize that we're all human. We all make mistakes. And if we get ourselves together, we can come back.
Willie Wilson's book, Inside the Park, Running on the Base Path of Life. Such a pleasure, Willie. Thanks
Thank you.
A lot.
Appreciate it.